Hello, my name is James King. I'm the current sports medicine fellow working with Central Texas Sports Medicine and Texas A&M Physicians. I do apologize if this suffers from some residency PowerPoint bloat. I will try to condense it. So, we will be speaking a bit on meningitis. Dr. Teller and I have basically the same topic, so he'll chime in, come the panel question Q&A session. So, first off, meningitis, very important for the area since we have such a huge flux of college students every year. So there's huge amounts of change in the population and just gives rise to the possibility of having diseases like this come about. So meningitis itself is a disease caused by inflammation of the protective membranes covering the brain. Can come about from several different reasons, which we'll go into. Here's just a representation. The top right being normal, bottom being infected. And again, this is not infection of the actual brain tissue itself. So going into the different causes, bacterial causes, viral causes, that was mentioned by Dr. Wilkie, several other things which can come about in different populations. The severity and the treatment vary depending on the cause. All treated usually as bacterial when you see them in the ER, because that's the kind that's going to get you into big problems. And so for public health concerns, usually the types that are infectious that you worry about getting transmission are the viral and the bacterial causes. Just another an aside, meningitis versus meningococcal disease, you might hear some of those terms pushed about. The two are not exclusively the same. Meningitis is, as discussed prior, inflammation of the brain coverings. Meningococcal disease is any disease caused by Neisseria meningitidis. When it's actually causing meningitis, then that's when you start calling it meningococcal meningitis. So just if someone spits those words out, you'll know what they mean. Key facts, here's just some statistics. Meningococcal meningitis is fatal in about 50% of the time when it's an untreated disease, so it is a concern. 5 to 10% of treated cases die from meningitis, and this can happen usually rather quickly in 24 to 48 hours. 10 to 20% of the population can harbor one of the main causes of meningitis, Neisseria meningitis, in their throat at any given time. So a lot of the times these bugs that we live with are the ones that cause the disease, but in a normal population, they're doing just fine. They're all kept in check. It's when you get sick and other problems present that they sort of start ramping up and causing problems. So again, these are go into more detail as to the different causes of bacterial and viral meningitis. You can see meningococcus is there, pneumococcus, group A strep, like Dr. Wilkie mentioned, which is on the rise. Viral causes, the West Nile virus, influenza, and other enteroviral causes. So the usual symptoms of meningitis, similar between the two different types that we're going to focus on, viral and bacterial. You'll have fevers, chills, mental status changes, so people won't be acting themselves. Nausea, vomiting. They'll have sensitivity to light, or as we call it, photophobia. Sometimes they'll have severe headache and stiff neck. So these are the people you'll see. They'll have a really bad headache, but then they'll have a fever, and it's just, that's when its alarm bells start going off as to this is something a little worse than the common cold. These symptoms usually develop in about 3 to 7 days. They can appear rather quickly as well. In infants, they're not going to have the same types of symptoms that the adults have. So any infant that's slow and inactive is more irritable than usual. Vomiting, feeding poorly, and the little soft spot on the top of their head, if it's bulging, that's another bad sign. So risk factors for developing these illnesses. Age, both of them, any age group can really get these. Infants and children are more at risk. For bacterial, community settings. So like colleges or military recruits who are in bunks together. So any time when population is crowded together, that's a problem. And it makes it for easier passing of this. Travel, obviously, for bacterial. Meningitis, sub-Saharan Africa is known as a meningitis belt. This is where we start seeing the epidemics creep up every year. And anybody who works with these pathogens would be at risk as well. Viral, it's basically anybody who can get, say, a cold, you can get a bug that can cause viral meningitis. Just because you get the virus does not mean that you will progress to meningitis. That's a big a big clue and a big distinguishing factor when you think of viral meningitis. So transmission, bacterial meningitis, it is contagious, but it's not as contagious as people would probably think. It's less contagious than the common cold. So you have to try to get bacterial meningitis. Viral, on the other hand, it spreads basically like the common cold. If you're not practicing good hygiene and you're around sick people, you have the chance of developing it. But again, if you get the virus, it does not mean that you're going to get the exact same illness. You're not going to get meningitis per se. You'll get a viral syndrome, but it doesn't mean that you're going to progress to meningitis. Other things for transmission of bacterial, it's spread by exchange of respiratory or throat secretions. Not so much from usual contact, or say you went into a room where someone with bacterial meningitis was. That's not the way this is really transmitted. Close or long contact with sick person, so healthcare workers, daycare workers taking care of people in, say, a nursing home or something like that. So diagnosis, usually whenever there's someone suspected of this, or if you have a child that you're concerned about it, you take them to the ER, and basically the biggest test that we can use to differentiate the different types is getting spinal fluid. And this is done by lumbar puncture in the bottom right. You would get CBC and other blood taken, but the determining factor is to see what grows out in the spinal fluid, which is where the infection lies. Prevention. Currently, there is an outbreak of an echovirus viral meningitis at the University of Maryland, and this was sent out from them just earlier last month, basically discussing that they're having a huge outbreak of cases of meningitis, but a lot of them are coming back as viral. So they go through and they start listing out things that should be done with the rest of the community and the rest of the college students. And this is an aside, just as a more prevention topic, this bill was passed, let me see, January 1st, 2012. So any person going to higher education needs to get vaccinated, and they are supposed to. There are some loopholes, be it religious reasons, or if they're international students, which Dr. Teller can go into a little more, but everybody should get immunized. More so on prevention, the best way to protect yourself and your children is to finish the recommended vaccination schedule. So this is a good reason why the Texas Department of Health sends out those letters to parents that your child is behind on these immunizations. You need to take them to your PCP and finish out your immunizations, which is very important for different variety of reasons, but one so is for meningitis. Vaccines are available for the three types of bacteria which are usually causing these problems, which is Neisseria meningitidis, Streptococcus, and Haemophilus influenza. The main vaccine for meningococcal disease usually will cover four of the different serotypes, which are the ones that cause the most problems. There has been some outbreaks in Princeton right now. They're having one with meningococcus type B, which unfortunately we do not have an approved vaccine in the U.S. They do have it in Canada, which we are receiving doses into the United States to try and help curb some of these outbreaks. This was posted for the University of Maryland. They're putting it all over their campus. Just ways that you can try to help protect yourself from viral meningitis. So stay around those who are sick. If you're sick, stay home. If, say, someone has a cold, you don't want to spread anything. If you're really sick, then go see a doctor. Wash your hands. Just healthy habits are paramount. So in summary, meningitis, like I said, is the inflammation of the coverings of the brain and the infection of the fluid around your brain in the spinal cord. If you believe you're ill or you see someone else who is ill, fever, headache, stiff neck, confusion, then they should be evaluated by a doctor. And this is just some other things from before. And healthy habits will save lives.